SeatGeek is a proud sponsor of Fantasy Focus Baseball. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We all have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and it is the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. It gets us there in person. Baseball games, you name it, Tristan and I have used it. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to the Fantasy Focus Baseball get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Tuesday, of course, is National Garfield the Cat Day. I have that written on my calendar. I'm going to eat lasagna for dinner.
You know, I didn't even see that when I sent you the lasagna picture, Kyle.
Really? Was it lasagna the pitcher for the Yankees?
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there. Welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball on a beautiful Monday morning, June 18th, 2018. I am Eric. He is Tristan, and we've got research associate Kyle Soppy, editorial watchdog Keith Lipscomb, and producer Anthony Colata. You today, Tristan, interesting weekend of baseball. We got some players that were not putting up great seasons, finally looking like they're going to. More injuries, of course, and a lot of news in the closer department. Man, three closers allowed four runs on Sunday. I can't remember the last time that happened. So
one of those was a pretty ugly game we'll get to.
We will get to that. Let's start it all off, as we always do, with the buzz. I try to avoid on our shows each week the starting with injuries or closers getting lit up. So let's start with some players that have been playing pretty well. Xander Bogaerts was the topic of my blog entry today. He homered in three of the four games at Seattle. Reese Hoskins looks clearly back on track after getting after hitting himself with a pitch. How do you say that? Like, he didn't get hit by the pitch in the face. He fouled it off his face. Now he looks fine again. Marcell Ozuna, the Cardinals, he looks great again. Yeah. Any of these players jump to your mind that you would like to discuss?
Ozuna does, because he had been one that we mentioned along with Paul Goldschmidt earlier, based on the early struggles, and the only theory I had thrown out there on him was just that maybe he was pressing. And Eric, I think you in fact also had said this, that it seemed like he was just with a new team, so perhaps he's gotten this straightened out. It's very, very promising to see a player like this who does have, I'd say, at the worst top 30 fantasy outfielder potential. On the high end is probably in the top 15. A guy like this getting his season back on track is a very promising sign.
Very promising. He homered three times in the past four games, knocked in five runs, a lot of multiple hit games. He's up to .294 batting average already. That went fast.
Yeah.
And
that escalated quickly.
It sure did. And he's the number four player over the past week on our player rater. Number one was Evan Gattis, who we discussed on our last show. Then Trout, Carlos Correa, Lorenzo Cain, number five. The top pitcher, of course, was Wade LeBlanc. Because, you know, who else would it be?
Of course.
I mean, if you could have named 100 pitchers, that would have been the top pitcher of the week. And you probably wouldn't have named him. Right?
Probably not. And, you know, it's going to be a really fun week ahead for him and his Seattle Mariners.
Well, you know what?
Look at that schedule, right?
I did see that. And they have a series at Fenway Park. So LeBlanc has a 2.63 ERA, a 1.10 whip. He's striking people out. So he just struck out nine Red Sox over 7 2/3, yep. Two hits, nary a walk. Why would I? Know, I mean, I know I wouldn't trust him at Fenway Park next weekend, but would you?
No, but having done this against that team, I understand if people want to roll the dice. The big issue I just have with this, I hate the cross-country trips, east going west, west going east. Especially going against tough offenses like this. I mean, Fenway Park's not a great environment for a left-handed pitcher either. That'd be another reason why I would be concerned about him. I think the Mariners pitchers are going to have it a little bit tough this week. And the big issue for me is just going deep in the games.
In a general sense, when teams are playing in back-to-back weeks, do you give the advantage to the hitters? Do you give the advantage to the starting pitchers? Like, say LeBlanc had struggled against the Red Sox, you never would have used him in his next outing. But now that he didn't, you might. Do you give any advantage when there's a rematch a week later?
The research I did, which was a couple years ago, I probably should refresh this to see if anything's changed with the homer happy nature in baseball, was that the pitcher actually had the ever so slight advantage in the rematches if they happened this quickly. That was usually somewhere within 10 days to 2 weeks at the maximum. The pitcher actually did have an advantage. But again, the difference here is that I do think there's a home advantage compared to road. So if you were doing it the other direction, I'd probably feel a little bit more encouraged.
So Xander Bogaerts hit the homers at Seattle this weekend. Back to being a top 50 player for you. I mean, the fly ball rate is up. He's hitting the ball hard again. He's swinging a lot more strikes than he did last year. He's healthy. You in?
I'm in. I mean, top 50?
He's on pace for 27 home runs. That's a shortstop.
Yeah, I know. And that's very unusual for Bogaerts because we think of him as a high ground ball rate guy, a 50-plus percent ground ball rate traditionally. This season he has slashed that down, which is the reason to get behind the homer outburst, that maybe we could boost him up to about 25-plus. It's a 43% ground ball rate, which would be the lowest in the major leagues for him since 2014, which I think was an abbreviated year. No, actually, that was 144 games. Huh, go figure. Top 50? There's a lot of good players in the top 50. Can I say 55?
No. Well, you can say it, but that's technically not top 50.
Now I'm thinking of my
I don't
one
think we need a ruling on that. I mean, if you're saying 55, that's okay. That means no, not top 50. Reese Hoskins is back in everyone's top 50. He has 4 home runs and 11 new RBI in the 8 games since he came off the 10-day DL stint. He looks good again. Bullpen doesn't. Michael Taylor, how about this? The baseball's leader in stolen bases is available in a lot of leagues. And the reason is that people don't trust he's going to get playing time. Michael Taylor is rostered in 26% of ESPN Standard Leagues. He leads the majors with 21 steals after he ran wild for 4 against Russell Martin on Sunday. You know, obviously, he's the 4th best outfielder, we think, on the Nationals, but there will be opportunity for playing time. I don't mind that he doesn't play every day because that batting average is such an anchor. I don't want him to bat 500 times, but I mean, he should be rostered in more leagues, right?
He should, mainly because he does fill homers better than he has so far traditionally, and he does fill steals. I don't think he keeps up this pace necessarily. He's always been a guy I think is a pretty locked-in NL-only play, or if your mixed league goes as deep as 14 teams, he's a locked-in guy. But it's the latter half of your draft. It's not the kind of guy you're going to be spending a premium pick on, and they are going to play him a good amount. I mean, he does provide good defense that does fuel some playing time.
Let's get to the injuries now. Carlos Carrasco of the Indians was hit by a Joe Mauer line drive. It doesn't seem like it's that serious. Maybe one or two outings at the most. Shane Bieber filled in on Monday. Did fine. Bieber's going to give up hits, but he does miss bats. It's an interesting combination. He's a guy who, like, if Bieber threw 180 innings next season, he might give up 180 hits. He might walk 12. So his whip is always going to be good, I think. It's all to me whether his K rate is 8.5 or 6.5. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, because you could end up in the Brad Radke or Scott Erickson mold there where you've got great control.
You are old, man. I don't even know who those guys are.
I read my baseball research books. I go through the little encyclopedia.
Don't cut Carrasco in any league. He's really good. Borderline top 10.
It's not like it's a tear or something from fatigue. It was a contusion here.
Yeah, you know these people. I mean, they see the word forearm and they're like, oh, he's going to have Tommy John surgery. Now, I can't say he won't. You know, teams lie all the time. Who was it last week? It was like a team just absolutely lied to us. Oh, it was the blister on Ohtani. Now he needs Tommy John. Oh, that escalated quickly. Mike Foltynewicz, again, this doesn't seem all that serious. In fact, he might even return from the DL this Saturday. I wrote that I would rather have Foltynewicz over Julio Teheran, who threw 6 no-hit innings on Sunday. They say he left early because of a cramp. He had already thrown 95 pitches. He wasn't going much longer than that.
No.
Are you still banking on Foltynewicz here? It's a high K rate with a high walk rate. He's like a 3 outcomes guy.
Yeah, he sure is.
2 outcomes guy, really. He's not even allowed that many home runs.
We compared him to another guy who had a pretty high walk and strikeout rate recently. He's a little bit better than that.
Oh, he's a lot better than that.
Yeah, there was. I think there's a stat out there that I think it's since the second week of May he had the league's best ERA, which is pretty extraordinary. It's Teheran for me. Or no, I'm sorry, it's
Foltynewicz.
It's Foltynewicz,
right?
For me.
I thought it was.
I have Tehran's page right in front of me, because I wanted to dig this up. The K rate. It's the simplest, the K rate.
Somebody wrote an article saying like that the Cubs have a big walk problem. No, they don't. They have one guy walking on base for 200.
Keep names out of it. You know?
But like that's the kind of thing you can write a story about and say, oh my goodness, this is why the Cubs aren't in first place because they walk people. There's only one guy on their staff that's walking people. Evan Longoria, broken hand, hit by pitch. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. I don't think this really hurts the Giants that much. I wrote that it happened when the Miguel Sano demotion to single A happened, which we also didn't get to. Let's get to that, too. So Longoria, you know, he's on pace for 25 homers. It's a low batting average. It's really not all that special. I think you can move on from him in a 10-team league. They're going to go with Pablo Sandoval third, even because Brandon Belt's back at first base. I want to see Hanson, don't you?
Hanson did get two games there at third over the weekend, so I think there could be a path to him playing a fair amount at third base. Sandoval, I don't know how much defense he's going to give them, so that, I'm with you. I'm more interested to see what Hanson could provide. He had a couple of weeks there before his own injury where he was putting up some kind of intriguing numbers. I think that, you know, certainly he's a stash for those in the much deeper leagues.
So you have one spot here. You have Evan Longoria and Miguel Sano in a weekly, but you got to dump one of them. Who are you dumping? To me, it's not even a consideration. I would not dump Miguel Sano. I know he's having a terrible season. I compare him to Michael Franco.
I'm probably dumping both in our game.
Would dump Sano in our game.
Yeah.
Why? You don't think Sano is still capable of like a 30-35 home run season? Are you giving up?
Anything after the top 125 players is not something you should use to clog your roster. Anybody who would have, if we drafted fresh today, if they would go in the second half of your draft, you should not be getting so attached to players like this.
Yeah, but Sano could be back in a week.
There's nothing special about Sano in our game these days. What he provides is very commonplace. He's very good at it. The power is elite. You and I have watched him many times. This guy can just scorch the baseball when he makes contact. But his homers are not as valuable today as they would have been a decade ago.
Well, 2 years ago they wouldn't have been the same. When he and Michael Franco came up and each hit like 18 homers in half a season, we thought Sano would be the 40 home run guy. Franco would be a 30 home run guy. I still think Sano has a shot at this. I don't think Franco does. I think Sano. Look, I we can differ. I wouldn't dump him. I would wait. I think the fact that it was single A and not triple A where he got demoted to is a great sign.
So
wanted to work with instructors. I bet he comes back and just does what Marcell Ozuna just did the last 3 weeks. That's what I think.
I don't think there's any way he's doing the batting average that Ozuna's doing. Clearly, Ozuna's hitting for a much better batting average. In Sano's case, I'd have to ask you, like, there's no league in which you, like, in the 10-team league, I think.
I have him in our office league, and I kept
That's
him.
Not a 10-team league. I would keep him there, too.
That's what, 13?
It's 13 teams with a six-man bench.
Anybody capable of a 40 home run season? If Joey Gallo goes in the DL for the next 3 weeks, you're dumping him?
That's a DL. That's very different.
Why?
It's hurt. Not a DL. This isn't a DL move.
You think Sano's going to be down there longer than 3 weeks?
He could if it doesn't go well. I do anticipate he's going to be back fairly quickly, but the Twins do have players that can fill those gaps and be patient with Sano.
All right. This will be a good talking point when he comes up and homers 3 times in the next 3 days. I don't know. I ripped him on one of our recent shows, but this is different now. I like this. I like that he was demoted. Michael Franco's just buried other than yesterday.
So you anticipate how much? Like, give me a day. Give me an over.
Look, if I thought Miguel Sano this season could hit 35 home runs and bat 260, mm-hmm. Nothing's changed for me, Tristan. I think he can come. I mean, he's obviously not going to reach those numbers now because of the first 2.5 months are so bad. But if he comes up and at the end of this month, why can't he have a 15 to 20 home run second half of the season? He can.
I think he could. I think the batting average will be lower than the projection you had there.
Let's hear the guys who homered and steeled. It's the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal.
All right, since our last show, Francisco Lindor of the future world champion Cleveland Indians. That's for you,
wow.
Lippy.
Appreciate that.
Friday was Eddie Rosario, who's really underrated. Looks like a top 10 outfielder now. According to Kyle here, ties Yoan Moncada and Trevor Story for the second most combo meals of the season with 3. First, of course, is Mike Trout, I assume, right?
Correct.
And what else? For the second season in a row, we could be looking at a player that challenges 30 and 10. 30 homers, 10 steals with a batting average around 300. That's a pretty good player. That's a top 10 outfielder. And then on Sunday, Eric Thames of the Brewers and Randall Grichuk of the Blue Jays. Eric Thames, I wrote this the other day, is better than Ryan Braun. I mean, Braun could steal a base, but he has a sub-300 on-base percentage. If the Brewers want to win games now, and they're platooning all these guys, or not platooning, they're time-sharing between Aguilar and Braun, who doesn't want to play first, and Thames, they got to play Thames and bat him first. He gets on base. He has power. He's legit.
Sure he is.
I mean, nobody's going to drop Ryan Braun to pick up Eric Thames, but I think they should consider it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, I prefer Thames in fantasy leagues to Braun right now.
Yeah, I do too. And
I think Jesus Aguilar is a better player than him. I think Domingo Santana. I know he hasn't played like
He's
it.
Not
I think
play though.
But I think that in terms of if we're talking about who's the better player, I think Domingo Santana is a better player than Ryan Braun.
What a lost opportunity for the Brewers. They could have traded Santana for a good starting pitcher. You know, maybe even if it was just like Jake Odorizzi this offseason.
Maybe they realize that those three players are better than Ryan Braun at this point. It's just that they have him tied to that contract. They can't really unload him.
Yeah,
the name value is going
to
keep him in the lineup. I understand it. I'm not saying that that's how it's going to play out or that's who you should have in fantasy. They're better players. I think Braun's overrated. Try and get him cash that in if you can.
If I had Braun in a fantasy league, I would have already tried to move him multiple times after a Philly series because he always lights them up.
I might still be trying today, unfortunately. I don't think anyone would bite.
I don't think I have him in any leagues. Look, if you have a sub-300 on base, I mean, I don't see what it is all about. Like Joey Gallo, I'd rather have than Braun. I know I'm getting 35 home runs. I don't care about the batting average with him. If I'm in an on-base percentage league, it's different. Anyway, Grichuk, you have no interest in Grichuk, right?
Grichuk's another guy who's got pretty good raw power, but I don't see the regular bats now, especially with Teoscar Hernandez around. I mean, there's going to be times where he has to sit as a result. Deep, crowded outfielder. They've got young prospects coming up. AL-only material. That's it.
All right, relief pitchers, quite a weekend for them. Here's the closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
So I saw a couple tweets. We're dumping Wade Davis. He entered Sunday with like a 3.20 ERA and a 1.10 whip and 20 saves. And Sunday went poorly. He walked four and gave up four runs. It did not go well. I wouldn't dump him. Now, I was ripping him back in March. I didn't want any part of a Coors Field closer, especially him, who was really babied last year. He handled carefully is probably a better way to put it. Are you concerned about Davis? Like, would you rather if Ken Giles is sitting on free agency in your league and you have Wade Davis, are you dropping Wade Davis for Ken Giles?
I don't think Giles is necessarily the go-to closer for the Astros. I think he'll get some more save chances, but Wade Davis is going to get more total saves.
I don't think he lost the job yesterday to Ottavino or anyone else. Rondon did get Houston's save on Sunday, and he hasn't allowed an earned run in more than a month. I don't see why Rondon and Giles can't share this job. Who was the other guys? All right, so Brad Boxberg gave up four, including a couple Mets home runs. Who does that?
That was an ugly outing.
Brandon Nimmo is special. I love Brandon Nimmo. I can't believe Brandon Nimmo is going to hit like 25 home runs this season. You realize that's going to happen. Brandon Nimmo. That's unbelievable.
I'm taking the under.
Nimmo versus Conforto this season, nobody would have taken Nimmo in fantasy.
I like that you're going with the 25 homers. We'll see. That would be a good...
That sounds ridiculous based on what we knew about him.
Yeah.
Right? He had no power in the minors.
I still don't think he's doing it, but I see your point that the power has been astonishingly good, and fairly legit.
It's launch angle. He's a smart guy. I see it all happening. It's fun, but anyway,
so you'd stay the course there and not cash in
on Nimmo. I don't want to because I'm having so much fun watching him.
I'd cash in.
I see your point. Yes, it's probably time to cash in because there's no reason for him to be hitting for this much power, but he is, and. Yes, Ozzie Albies, the power stopped. And with some of these guys that come up and they don't have, like, I don't know.
What I like about Nimmo is this. As you said, the launch angle, he has
contact.
He's also a patient guy, good walk rate, but he's terrible against left-handers.
Right, he needs to be platooned. So, you know, maybe he ends up being, who's that outfielder on Oakland? Matt Joyce.
Yeah,
but he's better than that. He can take a walk, even against a lefty. Anyway, I really like Nimmo. I cash it. But who's offering you? Nobody's offering you, you know, Eddie Rosario for him or Carlos Carrasco.
Of course not.
What are you getting for
Eddie Rosario? Is a top 10 infielder.
I'm just saying, if Brandon Nimmo's on free agency and Michael Conforto is right now, knowing what we know about Conforto's shoulder, I'm taking Nimmo.
Yeah, okay.
I'm finding Nimmo on my team.
You went there.
Boxberger's fine. Archie Bradley leads the majors in holds, and I think that's Arizona likes it that way. And Hector Neris, man, Saturday looked great. 8 pitches, 1, 2, 3, 9th inning, and then Sunday He had to be replaced after allowing two home runs. And Jake Thompson, of all people. Jake Thompson has two saves this season, Tristan. One is a one-pitch line drive to the warning track in center, one-pitch save. The other came in a 20-1 game where he went three innings. Nobody in history
yes.
has two more different saves than Jake Thompson has this season. You can't do it.
Oh, I don't know. We should go back.
Wes Littleton had
books.
The save in that 30-3 Orioles Rangers game, but he had no other saves.
Right.
He didn't
right.
have a one pitch save. Nobody in history has ever done what Jake Thompson has done.
I would say you're probably right there. Yeah.
And one final note here: Hunter Strickland saved Sunday's game, but he really didn't. Please tell us what happened and why you're concerned about this. Could change. You know, head-to-head leagues, couldn't it?
It could, yeah. Now, this has happened regardless of source, so we're looking into this as to whether this will get corrected or not. But I anticipate that this is going to get changed, that Strickland had two outs in a three-run game, and the rule for saves in Major League Baseball is that you have to pitch the full ninth inning in order to get a save with a three-run lead and no men on base. For some reason, the official score did credit him a save in that one, so definitely keep an eye on it. If you have him, that could influence your head-to-head matchups. By the way, I will throw you one other thing that struck me. The Orioles finishing the game yesterday with Brock 8th, Britton 9th.
He's already closing. I thought he'd be closing by the end of the week, and I think if that was
and
a
that's,
one
that's
run game,
where
he would have saved it.
I agree. That's where I think it flipped. Britton, real good. Are you all in, though? Where do you think he is the rest of the year?
You know what I would do if I had Zach Britton on a team? I'd wait till he saved two games this week and trade him.
Unfortunately, I agree with you.
Why is that unfortunate? That's exactly what
because,
I would do.
Because I think he's a very good pitcher. It's just I'm terrified they're going to trade him.
That season 2 years ago, everybody's still, you know, gleaning to that. I think, you know, he's better than last year, but he's never going to do what he did 2 years ago.
I still think he's capable of top 10 numbers, though.
I think a lot of guys are capable of top 10 numbers if they just pitch well. I mean, like, there's upside with a lot of – Shane Green could end up a top 10 closer. Shane Green might save 42 games for Detroit.
The only catch with him is that's a guy I could also see getting traded because Joe Jimenez behind him has pitched pretty well.
All right, the schedule, there's a game on ESPN tonight. It's Zach Greinke of the Diamondbacks and Jaime Barria of the Angels, and one of them has an ERA more than a run better than the other. And it's not what you think. Barria's been a lot better than Greinke. Now, Greinke got lit at Coors two outings ago. That happens to everybody. But in his last outing, he walked four Pirates in their ballpark. That's a problem. If he's walking like Albert Pujols tonight, which nobody should ever do, then I might start to worry about Greinke. I'm not worried about his command or control yet at all. But it's interesting because Barria is really underowned, and he's not going to be, you know, back in the minors anytime soon. I just want to see Greinke pitch well. Six innings, two runs, and he's back. That's all.
Yeah. In this case, I think with Greinke, he's probably at the back end of that top tier of trustworthy starting pitchers. So the danger is he drops down closer to, like, number 20.
The ERA leader is on ESPN Plus tonight at Denver. Are you using Jake DeGrom at Colorado today? Don't you have to?
Yeah, but...
How can you sit Jake DeGrom anywhere?
I've seen people who have ridiculous start caps like 10 in a week, in which case I'd never, ever use a core start. But you're starting him.
I think you have to.
Yeah, I mean, he's too good.
Are there any Mets you'd recommend for this series at Denver? Obviously, Brandon Nimmo is the best Met right now. You wouldn't use Conforto against the lefty Tyler Anderson today. I don't know off the top of my head. He's pitching tomorrow there. You know, do you tell me, are there any Mets here of value? Is this not even a series? What is this?
No, it's a series for them.
Herman Marquez is pitching Tuesday. Okay.
Right. And then I think they do. No, they have another righty going
you
in that game.
You dump in Jay Bruce. You had enough? We have a decade of reliability.
But I'm not a Jay Bruce guy. Jay Bruce, look, Jay Bruce is the kind of guy that in your league, if you drafted him, you have to just deal with the slumps and the hot streaks because that's Jay Bruce. That's Jay Bruce, the baseball player. The guys for the Mets that I like are kind of extending this week because the overall grades, including the second series they have during the weekend, favor the right-handed bats. So the two that stood out were Todd Frazier and Amed Rosario. But neither of those is necessarily going to move the needle in our 10-team
I'm interested
mixed.
In the lineup. If Rosario leads off or Conforto or Nimmo, that interests me. If Nimmo bats third, yeah, maybe they think he's a 25-homer guy.
This isn't a good – well, I mean, other than the fact that it's Coors and it's two right-handed pitchers, you should probably be starting Nimmo. It's not the best of weeks for him. Facing three lefty starters, not the best of weeks for matchups. And the Mets, by the way, are the worst team in baseball against lefties.
Tuesday, apparently, the Diamondbacks and Angels are again on ESPN at 10 p.m. Matt Cook for Arizona and undecided for the Angels.
And we genuinely do not know who that's going to be.
Yeah, interesting matchup on ESPN+. Plus. Blake Snell, who has become pretty top 10 worthy among starting pitchers against Justin Verlander. You're using Snell against Houston? Don't you have to?
Yes, he's earned it. However, that's another case like DeGrom and Coors. If you've got a question in your league of caps, okay, I understand fading him. Any other situation? Daily fantasy, I wouldn't be playing him. Otherwise, yes, he's a go.
And Snell has a 1.82 ERA this season when he's not pitching at Yankee Stadium. And, of course, this will not be at Yankee Stadium. Kyle is so smart. He figured out right away that Houston's ballpark is not Yankee Stadium.
Don't pay me for nothing here.
Fantastic.
Is their left field line like the Yankees' right field line, though? Otherwise, yeah, they're not even close.
Rich Hill's coming back, but I don't care. Do you care? I really don't. Like, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of it, too.
Do I care? That you couldn't have a more broad word to use
here.
Well,
that's mean to say I don't care. I mean, I want him, you know, I don't want anybody to do poorly or to be hurt all the time, but I've kind of lost faith that Rich Hill is going to help a fantasy team this season.
It's not the best matchup for him to come back to, especially, as you mentioned, now the question becomes, does a blister pop up in the second inning of every start he has, and that's all you get? I mean, you can get that Ryan Stanek from the Rays.
Wednesday, by the way, you got lots of day action at lunchtime, so please, for daily leagues and DFS, get it in time, get your lineups. ESPN Plus on Wednesday night, Nate Eovaldi of the Rays at Houston, can't use him there, against Charlie Morton, can use him every time out.
Yep.
A lot of strikeouts. Seth Lugo and Chad Bettis, no, I'm going to say no to that. What about your lasagna guide, home on Wednesday against Seattle? I'm not trying to be mean. I don't know how to pronounce it. What's
Loaiza?
Oh, that's right. He's a combination of Esteban Loaiza.
Oh, and he's Mariano
New
Rivera.
York Kyle Seager.
Don't you forget it. Don't you forget he's the new Mariano.
First
Rivera.
Outing was good. He walked people. He walked people. But
yeah, it's a ridiculous comp that was made in this case. But I get it in terms of looking. He's a smallish kind of guy. Very good fastball, and the curveball kind of impressed me. But the control just wasn't there. It looked like rookie jitters to me. I'm intrigued enough to add him in the deeper leagues. We're not there yet in ours. I'm not, in our standard game, can't use him here.
Luisa Saga against Frankie Montas of Oakland. Who would you pick up?
Montas, because I like the Petco matchup here. Wasn't so
Suter.
Good last outing.
Brent Suter at Pittsburgh. Brent Suter's kind of in 5 2/3 every outing, but he's okay.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy that if I'm looking to chase volume, so like on Sunday, he's my favorite kind of guy where on Sunday, if I'm trying to play catch up, I'd happily pick him up.
By the way,
it's nothing special, but he's okay.
Google Brent Suter and the movie Dumb and Dumber. That's fantastic.
Oh, right.
That is fantastic. Did you
they
see
make
it?
Some great videos. Then.
That video with him and Jeremy Jeffress made
it was
me
really
laugh,
well done.
Laugh out loud.
Yeah, that was really well done.
Today's hash browns, and I'm sure they will be really well done too, in a couple of ways, are brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Every business needs great people and a better way to find them, something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. Well, ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you are looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter does not stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, listeners to the Fantasy Focus Baseball can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. What can be better than that? Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel, because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
I swallowed a big June bug while we were driving. I'm not really hungry.
What?
Gotta love Dumb and Dumber quotes.
I'm not sure I've ever actually seen that movie to its completion.
Oh, no. Don't tell Brostat that. He'll make you watch.
I don't even know who that is.
Brostat.
Have I ever met him? I don't think so.
I believe you have.
Maybe?
I think you have.
All right, we're wasting time. Kyle, I'm sure you've got good questions here, and we can, have show meetings afterwards.
Sure. We can do that. Travis wants to know if Brock Holt is a thing in AL-only leagues. Tough to consider Pedroia much of a threat at this point, and Nunez stuck in a 6-for-38 slump. Is Holt worth your while in AL-only?
I have actually given up on Pedroia. I just don't think he's going to be healthy enough to be a fantasy producer, and certainly when he comes back to the lineup, there's no way he's going to the top of the lineup. Benintendi's great. Benintendi's on pace for 27 homers and 27 steals.
Yeah.
They're not dropping him in the lineup.
Nope.
Mookie and JD and whoever bats third, or Bogarts, who's great, or Moreland fifth. That lineup's sick. Pedroia comes back, he bats eighth. I traded Brock Holt away to Todd Zola in our score sheet league like a month ago.
Wow.
And Holt's pretty safe for batting average, even though he batted 200 last year. He looks better this year, healthier. I mean, I got parts back that I really needed, although Jose Peraza is terrible. But he was playing every day. I don't think Holt's a thing. There's no power, no speed. Really can't bat higher than 300, can he? So I'd say in an AL-only league, it's nice for like a buck or two, but I wouldn't go nuts.
Andrew Benintendi is ninth on the player radar for the season.
They have a big three, and Bogarts is fourth.
Yeah. Holt, it's empty batting average. This is the classic guy who used that label, empty batting average, which is okay in AL-only leagues, but, Eric, it's at your price point.
You know who when I think of empty batting average, who do you think of? Not him. Who do you think of? Like a regular player.
I'd be going back to the past for Mr. Gritty Angel shortstop.
I think of Yunel Escobar. That was always hollow batting average, but it was batting average.
He did get to 10 homers one of those years, didn't he?
Pretty hollow today.
It's pretty hollow today, yeah. But I mean, I mean,
he did. Brock Holt got the double digits.
Isn't Brock Holt 5-10 if he played every day? Yeah. 5 homers, 10 steals.
I don't even think he's ever stolen 10.
He's a guy I actually do have in my AL only league because that's how bleak the middle infield pool looks right now.
Yeah, and AL only, I mean, you know, he's fine as a, you know, I have David Freese as my corner in a late in labor and AL only. I mean,
I just added David Fletcher in labor.
It's ugly. I didn't add anybody yesterday. Now I'm just waiting to buy one player who moves from the AL. If Machado comes to the NL, I can get him. Although if anybody else gets hurt with the rule in that league, people can add the salary of players that are out for the season. So whatever. That league's over
running
already.
Out of time for that, though.
That league's over. The guy, it's amazing. I have like three leagues this season, Tristan, where a team was up 20 after a week, and that was it. Now, it could change, obviously. Half the season is still to go. But I look at the standings in like two or three of those leagues where a guy is up 20 after a week and he's still up 20 after 10 weeks, and I'm like, this is over. This is actually over. I've never seen that before.
Wow.
So many leagues like that.
And you know what's remarkable?
Our office league is the same. I think that's over.
Yeah, Dave Schoenfeld's
going to win that league.
16, 17 now?
He was up 20 after a week, and I thought, okay, he's got guys off to a good start. I think he had Harper. I'm like, it's still 20.
If I hadn't given you Jack Flaherty, I surely would have kept up. It's not true, actually, by the way. It wouldn't have made any difference in the standings. He's running away with it.
Kyle
must
have something else to say. What else you got?
We got a few questions on Ian Desmond this week.
Of course we do.
Gordon has him in a 12-teamer. He had 6 hits this weekend, but hitting just .209 for the season. You buying the turnaround coming, or you think the struggles?
I don't care
continue?
That he's batting .209 for the season. I care that he's batting .260-something over the past month with 8 home runs and 4 steals. This is what I thought he would be. And now he looks like a top 100 player. He's hot again. And a lot of that came on the road. They weren't even at home last week, right? So
yeah, they're all home this week. They have by far the best schedule of anybody in baseball.
Ian Desmond is actually on pace for like a 30-homer and 15-steal season. Now, he needs to do something about that batting average. But like we said, if he hits .260 the rest of the year like he has for the past 30 days, then we'll take that. That's a top 20 outfielder.
The big criticism on Desmond for the year is the super high ground ball rate, which I believe is 63% for the year. But, Eric, using your theory here of recent stats, 55 and 55% looking at May and June splits alone, and the line drive rates were both over 20%. So that is narrowing himself back to the Ian Desmond of old. I do think there's going to be a lot of streakiness. We could see another month where he has that 60 to 70% ground ball rate and a really atrocious batting average. But I lean towards believing.
He can't raise his average like Marcell Ozuna has over the past month.
No,
but if Ian Desmond just hits .260 the rest of the season, people aren't going to notice him in fantasy. Like, don't look at current batting averages. We're in June, mid-June. Look at trends of batting average. Maybe this is a blog entry for me. Like, who has a trend over the past 30 days or 45 days since May 1st? Who's hitting well since May 1st? Ian Desmond is. So that matters a lot more than his first month.
Here's a thought. He's right-handed. With that kind of ground ball rate, with the shifting these days, doesn't it strike you that maybe he'd be a little bit safer, these two? It's a little bit tougher to shift on the righties than the lefties. Like, if he was a left-handed hitter, I would be more critical of the batting average.
I actually do think that way. Like, there's no chance Joey Gallo can hit for average. But if Ian Desmond, you know, as bad as he was last year, and everybody thinks he was just horrific, batted 274.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me check to make sure.
I think it's tougher to shift a guy like this than
He batted better on the road than he did at Coors Field last year. It is tougher to shift a righty than a lefty, absolutely.
They do it, but it is tougher, especially when you get a man on base.
He's back in my top 100. All right.
Alrighty, Frankie wants to know if there's any reason not to use his roster spot that's currently devoted to Luis Castillo as just a streaming option. Getting sick of waiting.
I agree. I would move on too. He had a 10 strikeout game a couple outings ago, and I thought, all right, that's good. But then he followed it up with two at Pittsburgh, and home runs are wow.
Yeah.
He has the same number of starts this year as he did last year. Six more home runs. Wow, a lot more hits.
Yep. Lower velocity.
Yeah, I mean, the K rate's still fine, but I wouldn't give up on his career in a dynasty format because I still think there's something. He's 25. It's possible we've already seen his best. I don't think we expected a 312 ERA again. I felt like 375. He's not even close, and his FIP is not promising either. There's nothing here.
For me, the answer to this question comes down to entirely roster context. I don't want to get rid of Luis Castillo. I do think that there's going to be improvement going forward, but it's not going to be significant enough to lock down a spot. I just had a league in a head-to-head where I had to make 4 to 5 hard decisions just to try to catch up in my matchup this past week. Lost anyway, but at least made a shot at it, and he would have been one I'd cut. So, Eric, the one that I just couldn't cut, but I was about there, was Jake Arrieta. I think is better than Castillo.
Can't cut Arrieta.
The way he has pitched lately, I don't think he's that far away from falling into the streaming classification too.
I have a head-to-head league in which I was in first place two periods ago. I'm now in sixth.
Whoa!
I went 2-16.
Ooh!
And I have a good team. I just have a lot of guys like Chris Bryant and Greinke who just have not played well, and I ran into teams that just. You know, like one home run, one strikeout, one win more than me. Tom the intern just beat me 8-1, and I don't even know how.
Nothing wrong with that. It's Tom. Come on.
He's in like 13th place.
Oh. How's he in 13th place?
I'm just saying, like, sometimes this happens in a head-to-head league where you have a good team that just all together. I batted 150 for the week.
Yeah.
150. Let me check. I think I had a player who let me just make sure. But yes, like while I'm doing that, look for the notes. What's the next question? I mean, it has nothing to do with anything. It's just amazing to me. You can have a really good team, and then all of a sudden, everybody goes in the tank for a week or two, and you just fall out of contention that quickly. I'm amazed when that happens, but it does happen. Yeah, I lost 8-1 to him, and I batted. Oh my God. Yeah. All right. I had a bad week. 161. I have Gary Sanchez, too. Yeah, so, Chris Bryant, Gary Sanchez, Smoke batted 050. Candelario had 3 hits. All right, what's next? Let me stop talking about this. Moving on.
I thought Tristan was just being a professional and kind of leading us into the next question, but I'll ask it anyway. Part 2 from Frankie. He wants to know if you're worried about Jake Arrieta with 3 straight iffy outings to open the month of June.
I'm anything but professional.
Asking
come on.
For a friend. I mean, 2 of the outings were Milwaukee. That's a good offensive club. Okay, obviously the velocity is not a good thing. Well, actually, the velocity is up from last year, so isn't it?
Arrieta's, I believe so. Yeah, it's missing bats. Has
the K
declined.
Rate's way down,
yes.
And it's the worst. It's arguably the worst defensive team in baseball.
Also, I don't think he was a traditional four seamer kind of guy, so that the velocity numbers. No, I
he
mean,
pitches against the Cardinals.
Yeah, no,
on
he's
Wednesday.
A sinker oriented guy, and the sinker's up.
I don't think he's out of my top 20 if I ever update those rankings. But I don't think I would cut him. I don't view him as a streamer anymore. I'm not there yet.
I didn't do it, but I do think that he has another bad outing or possibly two. And again, this was in the desperate circumstance.
Look, he's not going to help you in strikeouts, and he's probably not going to help you in wins. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're looking at a guy here who's a 4 ERA pitcher with a 130 whip. That's not helping anybody. So you could be right. This outing against the Cardinals on Wednesday is kind of important for his fantasy value.
Of course, at the same time, we had people questioning Patrick Corbin's velocity drop and that the underlying numbers
were pitching well.
He stopped pitching well, but he also hasn't completely fallen off the cliff here.
No, it's hard to know. I mean, they could be injured and nobody's telling us, you know.
I think there's a great danger in kind of overreacting to peripherals that take a turn for the worse. I think we're a little bit too reactionary for that. Nowadays, with so much specialization of pitching, I think it's dangerous to just completely bail on
Look,
players.
If you wrote a story about the top fastball droppers among starting pitchers, okay, there's a lot of guys that people wouldn't realize, and some of them are still pitching well. I mean, you've got Gausman, Arrieta and Kevin Gausman's ERA, his fastball velocity is way down. It's like Castillo. But some of these, there's got to be guys who are still pitching well.
Yep.
All right.
I'll take a look at that this week. I could, you know, take me a few minutes to do it now.
Well, I don't want to make you work, but, you know.
Work! Oh!
All right, any more? Frankie, have any more questions? Frankie, you want to just call in next week and just, you know, do the whole show that way?
Yeah, we'll give Frankie, we'll hook him up with the number and see what's going on. But DJ's got our last question here of the day. He's got two pitchers he really likes, wants to know who you like the most moving forward, and if you believe in both the rest of the way, Michaelis or Newcomb? Who you got?
So the St. Louis righty who was pitching in the in Korea, or Newcomb, the 25-year-old lefty for the Braves, who strikeout per inning, a low home run rate, which probably can't continue to that degree. FIP is higher than his ERA. He's not much of a hard thrower either. What do you think here? I mean, I like what Michaelis is doing, but, like, he's not a big strikeout guy either.
Right.
Last I looked, his K rate was around 7. That's not going to help you a lot. It's not even 7 anymore. It's below that. Similar FIP on these two guys. If you can only roster one, which one was it?
I mean, I hate to take the lower K guy, but I'm taking Michaelis here.
Yeah,
the curve and the slider are really good, and his control has been exceptional.
Wow, 9 walks and 63 strikeouts.
Yeah, which obviously that's going to regress to the mean. I get that, but he's still...
Well, those why? Why is that going to regress? Why is a guy who's got such great command all of a sudden going to lose it?
Because it's extremely difficult to maintain those kinds of numbers. Let's see, what's the first pitch strike rate? His first pitch strike rate is 73%.
All right.
That's just crazy.
All right, well...
I don't think it's going to regress severely.
I think what's going to regress is the hit rate. He's hittable. You watch him pitch.
Yes.
You can hit off him.
Yes.
So, like, earlier in the show I said Shane Bieber is a guy who's probably going to give up close to a hit per inning. I think Michaelis is going to do that, too. He's not going to walk anybody. So the whip isn't going to stay at 0.96. It should be like a 1.15 whip. That's what I think he should be.
The Newcomb problem is the walks. Let's see. Yeah, he's been over 11% in every professional stop since 2015. I know he's made a big improvements here. He's got a good ground ball rate. He actually has hit 50% at this point. And also, I worry about the durability over the full year, whether they're going to try and maintain some of his innings. They're starting to do that. They're giving little hints of that in this, the way they're using the rotation the past 2 weeks.
All right, we're done. Time to go fishing, apparently, because it's National Go Fishing Day. Tuesday, of course, is National Garfield the Cat Day. I have that written on my calendar. I'm going to eat lasagna for dinner.
You know, I didn't even see that when I sent you the lasagna picture, Kyle.
Really? Was it lasagna the pitcher for the Yankees?
Oh, there we go. I can't, 40 years ago. Jeez.
All right. Well, I think we're done, right? We're going to do another show on Thursday. We're going day to day here. We're always day to day here on the Fantasy Focus.
And is that National Chocolate Milkshake Day after Wednesday's Vanilla?
You have to wait, come back, and listen to the 06010 for that amazing tease by true professional Tristan
Cogman. The people that decide these days, like, do they just flip a coin? Oh, let's make it the milkshake day. It feels like June 20th to me. Let's do it that way? Or, like, how does that get done?
Well, I've decided that tomorrow is National Chicken Parm Day.
I think every day is National Chicken Parm Day.
That's the problem with those days, though, guys, that we had this discussion in the wintertime. I think it was, maybe it was late fall, but I think it was November or December, and it was National Cotton Candy Day. And I thought, now, do you ever eat cotton candy outside of, you know, a fair? You know, does anybody, you know, do you get cotton candy anywhere else other than like a county fair or something?
I've never had cotton candy.
December 7th.
Never in your life.
Calendar, have some cotton candy on National Cotton Candy Day.
If you've got to be Homer Simpson and get the kitchen carnival.
You know, somewhere it's warm in November, just not where any of us live.
I guess it's not a very widely celebrated holiday.
Where's National Funnel Cake
Holiday,
Day?
Holiday, I say.
Same kind of thing.
Holiday.
I'll bet you it's in November.
<It's a holiday. laughs>
Anyway, I'm sorry. I just had to say that.
Glad you did. You imparted valuable guidance to the show.
Once again, man. It's amazing what I do on this show.
It is. And we kept it together despite your presence today.
Good work, guys. You can do Thursday's show then.
Maybe Leo's back Thursday, but who really knows for sure? Thank you so much for listening to our little Fantasy Focus Baseball podcast. The gang will be back, some of us, on Thursday. Please have an awesome couple of days.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.